When I hear the sound of the mridanga in my heart, I always desire to join in kirtan. And when I hear the bona fide songs describing Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, my heart dances in ecstasy. Whenever I see the transcendental Sri Vigrahas of Radha Krishna, I am in bliss. For by taking their lordship's prasad, we can conquer over the material elements. One day, while performing devotional practices, I saw my house transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. When I take the Charanamrita of the deity, I see the holy Ganges waters that come from the feet of Lord Vishnu, and my bliss knows no bounds. By seeing the Tulsi tree, my heart feels joy, and Lord Madhava, Krishna, is also satisfied. When I eat the prasad favored by Lord Chaitanya, it is a new life's experience. Bhaktivinoda concludes by saying, whosoever attains the stage of enthusiasm for these devotional practices will be supremely blissful wherever he may be. Did you mention that we were going to have questions?
I did.
Okay. So, we're going to discuss if you have any questions regarding what we spoke earlier. We can discuss now any questions.
Maharaj, the topic of the previous class was about the tools of happiness. So,
can they all hear what you say?
So this Krishna consciousness process is a very easy process to achieve supreme happiness. But I feel many times that there is this kind of burden from the past, that like my mind is attached to being like melancholic or depressed or like that. Somehow it feels a little bit like too simple to just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So how to catch this stubborn mind and actually experience this happiness in Krishna?
Everyone hear the question? Some yes, some no. Those that didn't hear, maybe Upaniti, come closer. So well, yes, it's like if you have a glass of honey and you wonder what the honey tastes like, and then you may lick the outside of the jar of the honey, but you won't taste anything, even though you see it. You have to open the jar and go inside. In other words, Krishna consciousness cannot be understood simply by theoretical analysis, imagining what it must be like. One has to actually open the jar and go inside. Then he can experience the taste. So, your question, sometimes you feel melancholy from the past and you think that it might be too simple. Chanting Hare Krishna may just be too simple. But when you actually chant Hare Krishna, then you find out that it works. Chanting Hare Krishna actually works. It really does transport us from the material realm to the spiritual realm. So, rather than licking the outside of the jar of the honey, better to go inside . Open the jar and you'll taste. When you actually experience the chanting, then you know that this is better than material things. It's no longer theoretical. Sometimes the scholars or those who are very prone to speculate, they try to figure it out, how it will work, how it can liberate, etc. But can't be. To some extent, of course, they try to do that. Before they chant, they say, I don't want to chant unless I know what it means, or unless I feel it, or unless I've understood. But part of the process of bhakti is to take a little leap of faith, so to speak. Krishna is saying, come closer. And if someone says, but if I come closer, what will happen? And how do I know that if I go closer, I may not be able to go back again? Or how do I know that going closer will be better than what I have? Or what does it mean to come closer? Or who's asking me this? So there's so many questions one could go on doubting and wanting more evidence, more proof. But part of the... It's like trying to learn how to swim just by reading a book. Can you imagine trying to learn how to swim by reading a book? The book says, you kick your feet and you move your arms. That's fine. But still, when you go to learn how to swim, has anyone had learned how to swim in swimming lessons? What do? Do they just do it in a classroom? On the blackboard? Say, okay, so who knows how to swim? And someone raises their hand, okay, show us how to swim on the blackboard. And they come and they draw a picture. Is that swimming? Is that sufficient? Is that going to get you across the river? I drew it on the blackboard. No, one has to actually get in the water and experience it. So that's the training. Theoretical training is all right. Blackboard training, book training, but there's more than that. You have to actually get in the water and move the legs, move the arms, and keep your mouth so it doesn't get filled up with too much water. You may know how to kick your legs and move your arms, but if you drink all the water, if you keep your mouth open while you're swimming, then you're in trouble. So there's so many things. You have to actually get inside. And that means some faith. Adho Shraddha Tata Saru Sangha Tabhajana Kriya. There's 9 steps. Adho Shraddha. In the beginning, some faith is required. Then, Adho Shraddha Tata Saru Sangha, in association with other devotees. Then, acceptance of the spiritual master and performing devotional service under his direction. Adho Shraddha Tata Saru Sangha Tato Bhajana Kriya Tato Anartha Navritti. In giving up the bad habits, just like if you have some heavy weights that you're holding, you have some luggage and heavy things you're carrying and you try to swim, it won't be possible for you to successfully swim. You have to put those aside, otherwise they'll drag you down. So those are the anartha, the unnecessary baggage has to be put aside. Anartha nivritti syat, tato nishta, tato ruchi. In this way there's a process, but you have to actually get in with some faith. That's the getting in the water, opening the jar. That means you have to perform here submissively. That's the beginning. And then it won't be theoretical anymore. If someone says to you that Hare Krishna is this or that, it won't dissuade you if they have some misconception, because you've already experienced it. You can't be dissuaded by arguments. That's the difference between a neophyte. A neophyte, Kanishtadikari, he can be dissuaded by other arguments. He can be convinced against. But a Madhyamadikari, a devotee in the second class platform, he's already tasted Krishna consciousness and he can't be convinced by other arguments.
Maharaj, you mentioned anartha nivritti. Can you explain more about anartha nivritti and the stages of other stages?
Anartha nivritti. Anartha means things that are. Artha means things that have value, and anartha means things that have no value. And so many bad habits that we have. Those bad habits, they're not conducive for spiritual life. In Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Sharanagati, he describes six items. And the first item is to accept whatever is favorable for the discharge of devotional service. And the second item is to reject whatever is unfavorable for the discharge of devotional service. So these anarthas, they're unfavorable. They're bad habits. Say I like to drink alcohol. I'm accustomed to doing it. But drinking alcohol is unfavorable for devotional service, because my mind's already intoxicated, and then if I add more intoxication, how will I be able to understand? Just like right now, let's say you had already drunk a good quantity of alcohol right now. Then would it be of any value for me to speak to you? Well, maybe a little value, because the vibration would still bounce off your... But not as much as if you're able to listen and try to concentrate. So therefore, drinking alcohol should be given up, because it's not favorable for devotional service. You give up things that are... Eating meat is not favorable, because we can't offer the meat, the flesh, to Krishna, because Krishna doesn't accept it. So it means I'm eating something that's not favorable to devotional service. It won't help me make spiritual advancement, therefore I should give it up. Or, let's use the analogy, let's say you're trying to recover from some illness. So when you have certain type of illness, then you're not advised to eat certain foods. Certain foods will not be favorable. So therefore, what do? You avoid eating them, even though you might like them. But because you're ill, anyone who's been to India knows, when you get dysentery, you know, you don't eat lots of foods, cooked in ghee, very delicious and rich foods. If you eat that when you have dysentery, well, then it just gets worse. You have to restrict certain things. Okay?
I heard about these three stages of chanting.
Of chanting?
Yeah.
Three stages of chanting? Hare Krishna? One stage is the offensive stage. Then another stage is the clearing stage. I guess you could call that the anartha nivritti stage. That's the stage we're supposed to be on, where we're clearing away our offenses. We're clearing away our unfavorable habits. And then the last is the stage of pure chanting, Shuddhanam, when one is free from anarthas. So the spiritual master guides the disciple how to give up the anarthas. Along with chanting, just like when you plant a garden, it's not that once you put down the seeds that everything's finished. No, you have to keep the weeds out. You have to keep the predators out. If you don't watch out, the deer will come and eat up all your, or the gophers or some creatures. Or if you don't put some protection, someone will come and step on it or ride a car over it. So there has to be some protect. Then you have to give it enough water. It's not that I put the seed in, that's it, I'm not going to do any more. No, you have to make sure there's enough water, take care of the weeds, do some fencing. That's part of chanting. Is the cultivation that goes along with it. Spiritual master initiates the disciple in chanting Hare Krishna mantra, but then the disciple has to go on chanting and avoiding the offenses, 10 offenses in chanting.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the spiritual master guides the disciple to give up the anarthas, so is it so that he is directly telling us what to do, or is he all the time guiding us even though we are not in his physical presence?
He guides by his instructions. He gives us instructions, and if we follow those instructions, then we're taking his guidance. What are some instructions that the spiritual master gives us, for example? Well, he says, stay in ISKCON. Right? Stay in ISKCON, join ISKCON, stay in ISKCON, don't leave ISKCON. Well, that in itself is an amazing instruction, isn't it? It's one instruction, but it has millions of parts to it. Because I'm thinking, well, how can I stay in ISKCON? It's too difficult. How can I associate with devotees? It's too difficult. Right? Because how can I stay in ISKCON? How can I associate with devotees and I have to get up early in the morning? It's too difficult. I have to only eat prasadam? Too difficult. I have to chant 16 rounds? This is too difficult. So that one instruction, stay in ISKCON, look how many things are included in it. Millions. Every day, you have to think, well, should I leave ISKCON? No, spiritual master told me to stay in ISKCON. I have to stay in ISKCON today. Next day, should I leave ISKCON? No, spiritual master ordered me to stay in ISKCON. All right, I have to stay in. So that one instruction, look how important it is. Look how comprehensive. You may think, well, I don't get very much association with my spiritual master. I wonder if he's giving me any instructions. But did he tell you to stay in ISKCON? So then, look how many instructions you're getting. Millions. Because every day, or when things get difficult and you think, I think I should go up to the, you know, up to the Lapland and just take it easy for a while. Spiritual Master said, no, stay in the association of the devotees. Huh. Maybe I should go to Hawaii, take a break for a few years. Oh, well, the Spiritual Master told me to engage in devotional service also. Didn't he? So, if I have to engage in devotional service, then that includes so many instructions there. So many things. I have to clean the floor, I have to chant, I have to distribute books, I have to do the aarti. This is all part of the Spiritual Master's instructions. But Spiritual Master is very expert, so he gives sutras. Stay in ISKCON, perform devotional service, few sutras, and then the intelligent disciple, he understands, aha, now I see why. By staying in ISKCON, I'm making spiritual advancement. I'm understanding more. Did he tell you to attend Bhagavatam class? Tell me. Bhagavatam class, 18,000 verses and 18,000 purports. So that's 36,000 instructions right there. And then plus all the further explanations. So just like Vedanta Sutra is very short codes, so the Spiritual Master, he's giving Vedanta Sutra. He's giving codes, very important instructions, how to perform devotional service.
Maharaj, some karmis many times claim that they are very happy and it couldn't be better.
They what?
They many times claim that they are very happy already and it couldn't be better for them.
Couldn't be better?
Yeah, they think this. So what is a nice proper way to answer this argument?
Well, it depends. If they don't want to hear, then of course there's no use casting your pearls before the swine, so to speak. You know that example? If they're not interested in hearing, then don't waste your time. But if they would like to hear, then you might ask them, well, you couldn't be happier, but maybe you haven't tapped in to another realm, another level of happiness. You may catch their interest that way. They say, oh, there's another realm? Yes, there's another realm you haven't experienced yet. Then they may be, oh, tell me about that. Because they're looking for happiness. Obviously, that's why they're so happy. They think they've got it. And they look around and they see that my friends are only driving a Ford and I'm driving a Mercedes. I must be happy. I'm better off than him. And I have a nice home and I have a nice job and I'm healthy. I must be happy because I can see compared to the others, I'm better off. But then, if you explain to him that there's another realm of happiness that you haven't even begun to hear about, wouldn't you like to have happiness that's unending, that never decreases, and like that? You can try. You can try explaining to him like that. Maybe they'll be interested. Happiness beyond your imagination. You say you couldn't even imagine being happier. What if I tell you that there's a happiness that's beyond your imagination? Then what do you say? You can't say, I can't imagine it. Because I'm going to tell you about some happiness that's beyond your imagination. Why do you limit the happiness that you're experiencing to that which you can imagine. Do you think there's no happiness beyond your imagination? Your imagination is material and limited. It's like the frog in the well. Is that a bird making that?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Sounds like a machine gun.
It's there.
Yeah, I see him there. What were we saying?
Happiness beyond.
No, after that.
Frog in the well.
Frog in the well. So a frog in the well, he's lived in a 3-foot well. That's all he's never been out. He's only stayed in the well his whole life. So if you ask him, have you seen the ocean? And he says, what's the ocean? And he says, the person says, it's a huge body of water. He says, is it bigger than my well? He's so conditioned, he thinks the only body of water that exists is his well. And the person says, the ocean is so vast. It's just vast. He says, is it twice as big as my well? Because he's so conditioned, he's thinking only in terms of his own experience. But he's only lived in a well of 3 feet. How can he imagine what the ocean is like? He needs to get out of the ocean and get out of the well and go to the ocean. Then he can see what the ocean is. Otherwise, if he wants to stay in the well and also understand what the ocean is, it'll be too much fun.
Maharaj, there is the analogy of Lord Chaitanya says about the planting of the seed of bhakti, and we should water it by the water of hearing and chanting. So sometimes it has been explained that in the same time as we are watering the seed of bhakti, there are also other plants around it which are growing, like the weeds, and we should be very careful to pick out the weeds. So is it so that these weeds also grow together with our devotional service and how to be a good gardener?
Yes, the weeds are growing. Sometimes the weeds are growing more than the original plant. Sometimes the weeds grow so much that they choke out the plant. So if you don't pull out the weeds, if you're very liberal-minded, let the weeds also get water. Let them grow too. Well, then, but they take more. And then they choke out the creeper. They choke out your plant of devotional service. So you have to get rid of the weeds. What are the weeds? Profit, adoration, and distinction. You have to be careful about that. That you're chanting, but you're chanting to become famous and to get profit, to become well known as a yogi or guru or advanced devotee or to get some money. So those are weeds. Holding on to material attachments, those are also weeds. Or chanting with the idea that chanting frees me from the reactions of my sinful activities. But I go on with sinful activities and then I chant afterwards. That's a weed. Then crooked dealings, not being straightforward. Therefore, devotees shouldn't tell lies, even little lies, shouldn't tell any lies. Very dangerous to get into the It's very dangerous to start lying, telling little lies. Better don't tell any lies, because devotee has to be very straightforward in his dealings. That means also, like when you drive, if you break the speed limit, that's also kind of like that. You think, well, nobody will see me. But you need to practice discipline, self-discipline. Or like some devotees, instead of driving on the right side, they drive on the left side when no one's there. Because it's just kind of cool. But that's not very healthy, because you're not practicing to be on the right, so you won't, it won't come as second nature to you to stay on the right side. Sometimes you may be carelessly driving on the left side and you're a little bit maybe not concentrating and smash. So, in other words, one should be self-disciplined. Follow all the chant 16 rounds, not just when people are watching you, but even if they're not watching you. Not that I chant 16 rounds when I'm around devotees so they think that I chant. And then when I'm not around the devotees, then I don't chant 16 rounds. Yeah, they won't know. So be straightforward in the dealings. Be honest. Keep clean. If you don't keep clean, don't practice keeping clean, then that will choke out your creeper of devotional service, that filth. Just like if you don't keep your sink clean, then it gets choked up and then you can't use it anymore. It's all blocked. You have to clean. Cleanliness is an important aspect of devotional service. Being straightforward. Shama, Dhamma, Tapa. Perform austerities. Austerities are austere. But we have to do them. But it's not easy to do them on our own. Everyone has experience when you're living alone and you try to perform austerities, getting up early, so many things, difficult. But when you associate with devotees, it becomes much easier. That's why even neophyte devotees, you shouldn't think I only have to associate with advanced devotees. Of course, if we can associate with advanced devotees, that's very nice. But even neophyte devotees are wonderful. Any devotees, because they inspire me to perform devotional service. Because they accept that it should be performed. That's the nice thing about being with devotees, is they accept the principles. And because we both accept them, then it means we're both kind of obliged to follow them. Just like, why is marriage important? Marriage is more important than just having a relationship. Because in a marriage, there's a commitment. We're committed to doing this for a higher purpose, not just for our own, as long as it suits me. Marriage is important because even if it doesn't suit me, I've made a commitment. Even if I don't feel like it on some day or some week or some month, still I've committed to a higher authority that I will keep this vow. So vows are important. We should associate with people who keep their vows, because by their association we'll be able to keep our vows. We'll get encouragement. And if someone doesn't want to keep vows, then spiritual life will not be very easy for that person. If he thinks vows are too much trouble, Why should I keep vows if I don't feel like it? Huh? And why should Krishna is interested in persons who keep their vows, because he keeps his vows. Konteya pratijani hi name bhakta pranasiti. My devotee shall never be vanquished. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madjaji mam namaskuru vame vaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Krishna vows, if one always hears about me, thinks about me, manmana bhava mad, becomes my devotee, offers homage unto me, bows down to me, they will come back to me, I promise. This is a vow. Krishna is making a vow. I'll take him back to Godhead. Krishna keeps his promises. So he expects his devotees to also keep their promises. Therefore, before taking initiation, one should carefully consider whether, if I make these promises, I'll be able to keep them throughout my life. If one is not sure, then he shouldn't take initiation. He should wait until he's sure. Better not to make promises that one can't keep.
Guru Maharaj,
say so they can hear. No.
Those people who they are, this chanting of Hare Krishna certainly is the best method for happiness, etc. But there are still those people who are not on that platform to take up chanting Hare Krishna. So, how would you advise those people to make advancement so that they can someday take it up?
Chanting Hare Krishna is so difficult.
Well,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He did it. How old are you? How old is he?
8 years.
8? He did it? He's only 8? Did you chant also? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. She's only 4 or 5, she's chanting.
Still there.
You want 2 years old. Okay, anyone 2 years old here? We have any 2 year olds? I've seen 2 years, 2 year olds chant.
Yes.
So, you want less than 2 years old?
But they are maybe.
But you're more than 2 years old. So, no, you're more than 2 years old, so that argument doesn't work. If you're more than 2 years old or more than 1.5 years old, you have no excuse for not chanting. You can't say, well, I don't chant because it's a Hindu. I'm not a Hindu. But George Harrison wasn't a Hindu. We're not Hindus. We're chanting. So many millions of people around the world are not Hindus. They're chanting. What other excuse? Well, I don't chant because I don't know what it means. Okay, I'll tell you what it means. Krishna is a name for the Supreme Lord. It means all attractive. Rama means the reservoir of pleasure. Hare is the pleasure potency of the Lord. Now chant. Now what's your excuse? Now you know what it means. I don't chant because I don't believe in it.
This Kali Yuga is so heavy that there's so many influences.
Kali Yuga is so heavy you can't chant Hare Krishna?
There's so many influences.
Well then stay in Kali Yuga then. Just stay here. But you can't get any easier than chanting Hare Krishna. You're looking for an easier process, that's the easiest. The only thing that might be easier is taking prasadam. So alright, we'll make one more concession. Before you chant, we'll give you prasadam, but you have to promise to chant afterwards. And usually that works. Generally we see that if a person takes prasadam, he'll be inclined to chant, isn't it? Even if the first few times they still won't chant, but after a few times, they'll chant. So take prasadam, then chant, all right? That's your answer. Prasadam, then chant.
But I'd rather meditate on the void.
But you're not meditating now on the void. The nice thing about chanting is you can chant under any circumstance. You can chant while you're driving to work, you can chant while you're in the shower. How can you meditate on the void when you're in the shower? Or when you're at work, if your boss comes in and you're meditating on the void, but if you're chanting Hare Krishna, you can do that everywhere. Anyway, meditating on the void doesn't give one much pleasure. Because if it's void, then the most you can get is void. Zero times zero is zero, zero minus zero is zero, zero divided by zero is zero. So what kind of pleasure are you going to get from that? Why don't you chant Hare Krishna? Because Krishna is the source of everything. And he's the source of all pleasure. The reservoir of all pleasure is Krishna. Anyway, you try it, experiment. What's the harm experimenting? If everything is void anyway, there's no loss for you. If you chant Hare Krishna, and if everything is void, then you haven't lost anything. What you're trying to get is zero, then chant Hare Krishna, and if you don't get anything, then you'll be happy. Because you'll have zero. Other questions?
So, of the four principles, there is this principle of not gambling. So, what are the dimensions of this principle of not engaging in gambling? What are the dimensions of... What are the dimensions of this principle?
Gambling. Dimensions. Don't go into the casinos. Don't play lotto. No sports. It's also gambling. It's a serious commitment. Taking initiation in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, it's not a joke. We may learn some culture sometimes by going to India, and you may see some Vaishnavas that are coming through from the tradition. You know, they take it quite seriously. So therefore we need to keep ourselves a little bit connected with the culture. You have to be careful not to... I take initiation and then cheaply, then I'm back again in my Western culture and I'm doing everything Western again. That's the offense of chanting Hare Krishna but maintaining material attachments. That's one of the 10 offenses. Spiritual life is a serious business. It's not that we chant Hare Krishna and then we do the same material things we did before. Just like there was one gentleman, he told me, he said, did you hear about this preacher? There's some preacher in the city that I'm living in. And he's got a big church and he fills it up with thousands of people every Sunday. People are going. So they're going, but what's changing? Nothing changes. As soon as they go in, they have the same habits after they go in, when they come out, the same thing. Nothing changes. He's preaching And they're all coming and they're praising him. Oh, he's such a good preacher. But they don't change their life. Same activities. So if one has the same activities after taking up spiritual life, then something's wrong. You have to give up the frivolous activities. So gambling is a waste of money, waste of time, and similarly these other frivolous activities should be given up. One has to, if he wants to go back to Godhead. Now, if you're not interested in going back to Godhead, then you can do so many things. You see, the thing is, if you give up frivolous activities now, then when you go back to the spiritual world, then you're qualified to enjoy unlimitedly playing sports and everything with Krishna. But if you want to do it here, that means you're imitating Krishna. You want to do it without Krishna. So then you don't. Then you have to do it without Krishna, but you have to stay here in the material world. We have to be serious. But that seriousness is not unhappiness. When we accept the seriousness of devotional service, then it's very happy also. Enjoyable.
Maharaj, can you give some details of why the materialistic people feel themselves happy, that they are happy? They think like this about themselves, that I am happy.
They think they're happy because they don't know what happiness really is. If they really knew what happiness was, they wouldn't think they were happy. They're in illusion. They're mistaking something that's not happiness for happiness. So why do they think they're happy? Because they're in illusion. This bird, when he catches a worm over there, he thinks, now I'm really happy. But eating worms is so nice. Is that really nice that the soul gets great pleasure out of eating a worm? But he's in so much illusion, he's thinking, I'm a bird, and I eat worms. So when I get a worm, I'm happy. But the whole thing is incorrect. He's in illusion. He's not a bird. And eating worms is not happiness. So the whole thing is false. It's like when someone drinks, right? When he drinks, you know, he thinks whatever he says is so clever. He speaks so many things. He laughs. He thinks he's the center. He thinks everybody is, you know, really appreciating him. He's so much in illusion. He thinks that everybody is appreciating him, what he's saying. He's standing up on the table, you know, hey, look at me. And he thinks everyone's really impressed. Actually, they're thinking, this man is completely obnoxious. But because he's in illusion, he thinks, now I'm the center of the party. Without me, everything would have been boring. I made the party, and everyone else is thinking, if he goes to the next party, I'm not going. But he's so much in illusion because he's intoxicated. He doesn't even realize that he's intoxicated. So this is called illusion, maya. The living entities are in illusion and they think they're happy. Avaranatmika. They're covered by maya. Any other questions?
Maharaj, I have a question about how to meditate on Krishna like
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's the best meditation on Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna. That's the best meditation. Because in this age, it's not the age for other types of meditation. If you sit and try to meditate on the form of Krishna, it'll be difficult for you to keep Krishna's form there. Have you tried that?
Well, my mind is such that I couldn't.
You couldn't. You tried, so you found. But chanting Hare Krishna, and if chanting Hare Krishna doesn't do it, that means you have to chant louder. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. The more you, the louder you chant, then easier it is to meditate on Krishna, because Krishna and His name are the same. That answer your question?
I was thinking of continuing by, like, when we read, for example, Krishna books. So, should we somehow like try to visualize the pastimes in the Krishna book, or to somehow use our imagination to have the experience
that's
more
nice.
Closer?
Yes, that's nice. Visualizing the pastime. That's why we're going to have play, huh? A little later, we're going to have a play. No, canceled? Oh, it's still on. So, why are we going to have a play? Because we want to visualize the pastimes. I hope they do it very seriously and don't make a joke out of it. Hmm? Serious play?
Yeah, okay.
No joke. Because play, Prabhupada didn't like joking. They should be done very seriously. Because it has to portray the actual pastime. Then, actually, Rupa Goswami says, if the plays are done in a serious way, then the audience actually can get bhava. They can actually get ecstasy, spiritual ecstasy, with Krishna. They can enter into the pastimes through the play. So yes. That's why we do dramas. That's why we paint pictures of Krishna, these pastimes. The artist, when he's painting, he's visualizing the pastime, isn't he? He's visualizing. And he's, by his talent, he's making it so that others have it easier to visualize the pastime. It's like our artists, when they paint Krishna and they paint his nice jewelry and the nice different gold ornaments and the crown and the peacock feather, that's a great service. Because in the rest of us, we can also visualize Krishna. Exactly. When you tell others about the stories of Krishna, then you're visualizing, aren't you? You have to be. If you're telling them about Aghasura, and you say that he lifted his mouth up and it was very high, like a big cave, don't you have to picture it in your mind? That's visualizing. The more you visualize, the better the experience. That's why Shukadev Goswami has given so many details. Why are all those details there? He could have just said, oh, Krishna killed 20 or 40 demons. Finished. Well, that's nice. But if we hear the details, what this demon looked like, how Krishna killed that demon, what day it was, what time of the year it was, what portion of the forest was it, who was there, which coward boys were there. Now, these are all very nice details. They're not just extraneous. They're essential. And the more we meditate on those details, then the more we are meditating on Krishna. The more advancement we'll make. So when you read the pastimes of Krishna, if you remember all the details, oh, then your visualization will be enhanced.
Marat, can you maybe a little bit, maybe technically explain why it's not possible for us to give love to another jiva like we give love to Krishna?
Why can't we give love? Well, we can give love, but we can only give the love as long as it's connected to Krishna. Because Krishna is the real recipient of love. So, if, let's say I'm giving love to Krishna, and Krishna is giving love to me also. If Krishna is giving love to me, I can give Krishna's love out to someone else. You see? If I'm giving love to Krishna, Krishna says, Yayatamam Prapajate, Tangstataiva Bhajamyam. So if I'm giving love to Krishna, Krishna is giving love to me, then I take that love that Krishna gives to me and I give it to someone else. That's okay. That I can do. But then, the love that I give to them, that's actually Krishna's love. Krishna is giving love through me. And then when the other party gets the love from Krishna and they give the love back, it may go through me, but it has to be given back to Krishna. If I try to keep it for myself, just like sometimes one partner wants to serve Krishna and the other one says, no, love me. Don't give love to Krishna, give it to me. So they're blocking. They want to be the object of love. But the problem is that they're not that lovable. They're not as lovable as Krishna. They don't deserve the love that Krishna deserves. And besides that, they can't reciprocate it. They can't receive it even. They can't even digest it. They're not capable of receiving love. They're not worthy of it. And similarly, they're not able to give love back. Because what do they give in the name of love? Their love is conditional. But that's not the definition of love. Love means unconditional. Krishna can give love. Krishna can give pleasure. You may say, I love someone. I always give this example that someone says, I love this person. Okay. And they think it's spiritual love. But if that soul that's in the body, if that soul were in a different body, would you be feeling the same love? Let's say you have love for this person, but if the soul in that person's body were in the body of a male frog, would you feel the same thing? Would you still want to have nice romantic evening together? Let's sit together under the candlelight. Would you like to bring that male frog and sit under the candlelight together? Would you like that association? No. But it's the same person, it's just a different body. So the point is, the so-called love is based on illusion. Again, I'm thinking I'm loving the person, but I'm actually loving the body. And what is that love for the body? I'm just actually trying to give myself gratification. I only want pleasure for myself, and I'm not even the body that I'm trying to give pleasure to. The whole thing is an illusion. I'm trying to love something that's not lovable. It's just a dead carcass. You know the story? There was one prince. Some of you may have heard this once. There was a prince, and he fell in love with a beautiful princess. And he asked her to marry him, and she said no. She didn't like him because he was a materialistic person. She was more self-realized, more advanced. But he insisted, no, I must have your hand. You must be mine. She said, all right, look, if you're sure you want me so much and you love me so much, and you come back in 2 weeks, and if you still love me, then I'll be happy to be your wife. And he said, ah, this will be very nice. So he went away, and for 2 weeks, the princess, she used laxatives and purgatives. So it means she was passing loose stool, and she was vomiting. And she kept all the vomit and all the loose stool in a big pot. And when he came back after 2 weeks, and he came to the door, she didn't look the same. Her eyes were all sunk back in her head. She was all thin. Her bones were sticking out. Her complexion was completely different. She looked like a witch. So he came to the door and he said, where's that beautiful princess that's going to give me her hand today? She said, I'm the princess. He said, you? You look like a witch. So no, I'm the same princess, but I've separated my beauty. Oh? Yes, would you like to see my separated beauty? Yes. And he took her into the other, she took him into the other room. She said, here, go over there, look inside the pot. He went inside the pot, and it was ghastly. She said, that's my separated beauty. That's what you were in love with. You loved my beauty, but there's my beauty. That's the only thing different. The only separation from me and that beautiful woman that you were so much captivated by. Here it is. Go ahead, love it. So what is this love? This whole love idea is based on the body, based on illusion. The body's nice as long as it's got the nice smooth skin and, you know, we keep it. But when you take it outside the skin, then it's abominable. As long as you can keep it inside in some kind of shape, then we think it's lovable. When it comes out, oh, it's disgusting. What kind of love is that? One man, when I was in Scotland, we used to live next to this one man, Mr. McDermott. Old man. You never saw anyone more miserable than Mr. McDermott. In all the time I saw him, I never once saw him in even an ordinary mood, even reasonably happy. He was always miserable. Literally, this was the most miserable man I ever saw. So one day, we came back, and the man was lying on the steps. He was intoxicated, which was quite common, but this was a little unusual that he was even on the steps. He was lying. So I said, Mr. McDermott, you know, are you all right? He said, no, I'm hellish. Everything's hellish. I said, what? Why? Why is everything so bad? He said, since my wife died, my life has been simply hellish. So he was an old man. He had been married many years to this wife, and then she died. That often happens. When one of the members dies in old age, it's very difficult for the other party. So he said that. He said, since my wife died, my life has been simply hellish. So what kind of love is that? I give all my love and then when she leaves, I'm in hell. And most of the time I will be separated from her because we can only be together for a short time and then separation. So what is this love? What happens if you give your love to someone and they don't care for you? They say, you know, could you leave me? Get out of here. You say, but I love you, I love you. Just get away from me, I'll call the police. I've got my cell phone. All I have to do is push 911. Get out. What kind of love? You're giving your love and they're saying, get away from me. Or someone else is loving you and you say, get away from me. I don't want you here. You don't want them anymore. They say, no, but I love you. I have to have you. Just get away from me. Leave me alone. Well, what is this love? Love is meant for Krishna. And if you have Krishna's love, then you can transfer it. And then, if they want to give their love to you, but you have to give all that love to Krishna. See, the guru, he accepts so much love from the disciples, but he can't keep it for himself. If he tries to enjoy it, thinking, yes, I'm really worthy of all this love. I didn't know I was so great. Now I realize, I didn't know I was so lovable, but I must be really lovable. No. Then he falls down. As soon as he thinks, yes, well, I guess I deserve it. No, you don't deserve it. The love has to be given to Krishna. And the guru gives so much love to the disciples. But that's not his own love, it's Krishna's love. It's his love too, but his love is part of Krishna's love. As long as it's part of Krishna's love, as long as he's doing what Krishna wants, then everything is nice. Then, yes, you can love the other living entities. If you think of them as parts and parcels of Krishna, you can love them. But not to exploit them. Not that, oh, there's a beautiful young girl. I think I'll give Krishna's love to her. No. And there's a old man, ugly old man. I won't give Krishna's love to him. No, you have to give Krishna's love to not only humans, but even the plants, even the animals. Krishna's love is for everyone. Suridam sarva-bhutanam. Not for sense gratification, but for Krishna's service. What's the best thing you can give to... If you love someone, it means you want the best for them. So what's the best thing that you could give to someone? Krishna. So if you love them, what will you give them? So yes, you can love them. If you love them, give them the best thing. You'd be cheating them if you say, accept me. I can protect you. I can give you pleasure. You're cheating. You're a cheater. You can't protect anybody. You can't give pleasure. How much pleasure can I get from your bag? So you're cheating if you say that I will protect you, I will give you pleasure. You can't do it. It's simply not possible. Anyone who's tried to have a relationship, they find that out. It's not so easy to give the other party pleasure all the time, isn't it? Have you ever had a relationship where you were able to give the other party pleasure all the time? Very difficult. You just don't have it in you. You just can't do it. You try to be witty, huh? You wake up in the morning, you try to be witty. It doesn't work. Sometimes, you know, the other party wants to talk, you don't want to talk. So they get upset. Or sometimes you're not keeping things clean enough, the other party gets upset. Or you don't make enough money, the other party gets upset. Krishna doesn't have that problem. He has unlimited money. If one of his wives wants something, one wife, Satyabhama, she said, could I have a parijata flower? like Rukmini got a parijata flower, could I also have a parijata flower, my dear husband? She said, one flower? I'm prepared to give you a whole parijata tree. Here, take this one. Can you supply your wife a parijata tree? You? Can you? What kind of a useless husband are you? If she asks for a new car, you can't even give her a new car. What to speak of a parijata tree? She wants a new sari. You say, do you mind a little cotton sari? Maybe we can get one used. Can you get me some nice gold? My dear husband, I want a nice gold necklace and bracelet matching and earrings, gold and diamond. You say, well, I can't do it. Well, you know. What kind of husband are you? What kind of lover? Can you play the flute? So enchanting. You think you can? Krishna can play the flute, all enchanting. Can you play? He says, I can play the flute, but no one will be enchanted. They call the police. Can you tell there's a person? He's making noise out there. He's disturbing us. In the middle of the night, he's playing this flute. No girls are coming, but the police will be coming. Hey, stop this flute playing. When Krishna plays the flute, all the beautiful damsels of Vrindavan are coming. But when you play, the police come. Hey, stop this. So how can you be a lover? What kind of lover are you? You're not lovable. And then when you get old, then your face becomes wrinkled and out of shape and you can't walk so nicely. Then what kind of lover are you? You old man say, oh, okay, girls love me. They say, no, we don't love you. Our love for you has gone far away. You think you won't become old? Yes, it happens to everyone. But it doesn't happen to Krishna. He's Navayovana. He's ever youthful. Ever fresh. Never gets older than 16 or 20 years. No bad aromas coming from his body. What about your body? You're not a lover. Krishna, his body scent is combined fragrance of sandalwood, aguru, what else? Camphor, musk, yes. That's what Krishna's body aroma is like. What about yours? You're not a lover. You're not lovable. How can someone be lovable if their body has bad aroma? No one wants to love someone with bad aroma. What about when you get diseases? Are you very lovable when you've got a disease? Are you, if you're, someone wants to come and make love to you when you have a disease, is it very... But Krishna never gets disease. He's always lovable. He never gets disease. If you get some disease, you're not at all in the mood for love, nor is anyone in the mood for loving you. You're not a lover. You're not lovable. Krishna is lovable. Everything about Krishna is lovable. He always knows how to play just the right way with the girlfriend. He always does it perfectly. He speaks sweetly when it's time to speak sweetly. And sometimes he may even disappear, like the gopis, sometimes he's dancing with them, speaking so sweetly, then sometimes he disappears. But their love increases. If you try that, their love will go the other way. They'll say, he doesn't care about me anymore, I'll find someone else. But they never do that with Krishna. Our idea of love is, I love them, that means I want sense gratification from them. What kind of love is that? That's exploitation. I love you as long as you give me sense gratification. As long as you appeal to my senses. And as soon as you don't, get out of here. This is not love. This is business. This is just a business deal. All right, you could all write it on paper. All right, as long as you give me sense gratification, then I will, you know, take you out at night and pay for the restaurant bill. And that's before marriage. Then after marriage, then as long as you, you know, do this and this, then you can stay in this house and I will pay. It's all a business deal. But that's not the mood of the gopis. The gopis, Ashli Shava Padaratam Panastamam Adarshanam Marma Tam Karotuva Itatata Vava Didatu Lampato Mat Prana Natus to say Saiva Napara. I do not know anyone else but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall always remain so. Even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me, still he is my worshipful Lord unconditionally. That's love. No conditions. Doesn't matter if he goes away forever. Doesn't matter if he breaks me by his embrace. I saw one movie before I joined the movement. It was a very touching movie. It was about a man and a woman who fell in love. And then somehow or other, he had to go away. I think he was in the army or something. And so the idea was that they were going to get back together. They were going to come back together again. So she was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and he didn't come back, and they didn't know what happened to each other. And so finally, she found someone else, and then they saw each other, and he had someone else. And they didn't wait forever. The song was that I'll wait forever for you, but they didn't wait forever. They became impatient. Because why should I wait forever? There's not much difference between him and someone else. There's not much difference. But there's a big difference between Krishna and everyone else. But the rest of us, there's not much difference. If you don't have this one, you'll find another one. It's not so romantic as we like to make it. No, you're the only one. The only one. No, but if you were born in another place, you would find a different one. Huh? You didn't check all of them out. You say she's the only one, but did you check all the others out before you decided she's the only one? No. You became. So this is not love. We should have a somewhat pessimistic view about materialistic love. It's lust. Love is for Krishna. That's forever. Selfless love. Unmotivated, uninterrupted, unconditional love. Okay, so I think we'll stop there on that note. Thank you very much. Shishigorni Tai Ki Jai. Nam Vishnu Purani Krishna Prasadam.